It's the annual New World Notes Christmas show, which means we'll be hearing more songs than usual. All of them works of comic satire, I promise. Specifically, we'll be hearing Christmas songs from Hugh Blumenfeld, Roy Zimmerman, and, if time permits, Stan Freberg. The last of these guys is actually a Christian. You don't have to be Jewish to write a good Christmas song. We'll also have some brief reflections on the perplexing historical Jesus, on the state of the world, and on this big gap. On the one hand, there are the values we celebrate in our winter holidays. On the other hand, there are the values by which our rulers run the economy and run the world 12 months a year. And we'll have a review and an update on the most publicized event of Christmas 2009. Do you remember what that was? Don't feel bad if not. It hasn't gotten much play since it served its purpose. It was Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, the alleged underwear bomber. This brings us to this installment's title, Christmastime Absurdities. Now, the word absurd and its cousin absurdity each has two meanings. One meaning is ridiculously unreasonable, preposterous, almost entirely incredible. The official story of the supposed Christmas underwear bomber is absurd in this sense. The official story has about 8 parts, and not a single one of them is plausible. We'll refresh your memory in a bit. But absurdity has a second meaning. It refers to a gaping, seemingly unbridgeable gap. On the one side are human needs and human experiences. On the other side are the structure of society, the structure of the state, maybe the structure of the universe. When a philosopher or a playwright explores the absurdity of the universe, this is what she's looking at. The gap. Not the clothing store, the big gap. In the 1950s, there was a theatrical movement called Theater of the Absurd. It focused on this gap. One play in this vein was by Eugene Ionesco, titled The Lesson. 2 characters. A girl is meeting with her academic tutor. He has his lesson plan all drawn up. He represents the structure. He asks his pupil academic questions. She keeps replying, "But I have a toothache." There's an unbridgeable gap between the lesson plan and the real human needs of the girl. She doesn't need any tutoring. She needs a dentist. Eventually, the angry tutor kills the girl. The gap is the absurdity. Especially at Christmas time, I cast my eyes about, and my soul feels like it has a very bad toothache. So today we look at both sorts of absurdity. Roy Zimmerman deals with both in his song on Christmas absurdities, and he does it with a lighter touch than I've managed. Let's have a listen.
Little Johnny Johnson wants an M16. Sister Susie wants an Uzi and a submachine. Kids are making wishes and wartime strategies, singing happy, happy birthday to the Prince of Peace. Buy war toys for Christmas, have a happy holiday. Santa traded in his red cap for a green beret. Teach those happy little children to be Hellcats when they play, and have a very merry military day. The latest deadly laser gun. Little Tommy asked his mommy for his own B1. Kids are dropping napalm on their Christmas trees, singing happy, happy birthday to the Prince of Peace. Buy war toys for Christmas, have a happy holiday. Santa knows the mistletoe's the line in every way. Singing, oh my golly, Holocaust. Darling Danny Simpson armed his own brigade, staged a coup and overthrew the Christmas Day parade. Kids are roasting chestnuts and burning effigies, singing happy, happy birthday to the Prince of Peace. Buy war toys for Christmas, have a happy holiday. Santa slayed his reindeer, now he flies the Enola Gay. Teach those happy little children to be Hellcats when they play, and have a very merry military day.
Yes, Christmas celebrates the birthday of the Prince of Peace, a.k.a. Jesus of Nazareth, a.k.a. Jesus Christ. Like every other kid in my Sunday school class, I thought Christ was the guy's last name. But it turns out that Christ means literally the Anointed One, or more broadly, God's Messenger. I always found the historical Jesus a hard guy to get a grip on. On the one hand, he's the Prince of Peace, who proclaimed, "Blessed are the peacemakers," who advised, "If your enemy smites you, turn the other cheek." On the other hand, he said, "You need a sword. If you can't afford one, sell your cloak and use the money to buy a sword." I'll leave it to the wise theologians to reconcile all those quotes. I sure as heck can't. And what's with flying into a rage and driving the money changers out of the temple? What was that all about? What were the money changers doing that was so bad? Just holding an honest job, exchanging Canadian dollars for euros, Swiss francs for shekels, and whatnot. American Express does this every day. Now, if Jesus had really wanted to make a name for himself and do some good for Judea, he would have driven the high priests out of the temple, put him in an ox cart, and packed him off to Rome for trial. Now that would have been cool. My friend Teresa Caraggio sees Jesus as a spy, as an agent provocateur, serving the Emperor of Rome, helping the Emperor keep the Palestinians in line. I'm not much of a classical historian, and I'm an even worse theologian. So for details, I will refer you to Teresa's fine podcasts and fine blog, www.thirdparadigm.org. No matter how we understand the historical Jesus, I think we can agree on this. Most of Christ's most vocal supporters today pay precious little attention to any of the precepts he pronounced. Heal the sick? That's socialism. Feed the hungry? Nah, that just encourages dependency and raises taxes. Rich people should sell all their belongings and give the money to the poor? That one is so absurd, the Christians don't even give it a rebuttal. There seems to be a bit of a gap between Christ's teachings and what his most vocal supporters keep demanding in his name. Hugh Blumenfeld has a nice variation on this same theme, again suggesting that if Christ returns, he won't get a very warm reception from the prominent Christians. In contrast, Blumenfeld likes the very aspects of Jesus that Jerry Falwell hates and denies. Here he is.
Well, Jesus was a homeless lad with an unwed mother and an absent dad. And I really don't think he would have gotten that far if Newt, Pat, and Jesse had followed that star. So
let's all sing out praises to that long-haired radical socialist Jew.
Oh, when Jesus taught the people he would never charge a tuition fee, he just took some fishes and some bread and served up free school lunches instead. So let's all sing out praises to that long-haired radical socialist Jew. Oh, he healed the blind and made them see. He brought the lame to their feet. Yeah, rich and poor, anytime, anywhere. Just pioneering that free health care. So let's all sing out praises to that long-haired radical socialist Jew. Well, now Jesus hung with the low-life crowd, but those working stiffs sure did him proud. Yeah, some were murderers, thieves, and whores, but at least they didn't do it as legislators. So let's all sing out praises to that long-haired radical socialist Jew. Well, now Jesus lived in troubled times. The religious right was on the rise. Oh, now what could have saved him from his terrible fate? Separation of church and state. So let's all sing out praises to that long-haired radical socialist Jew. We know sometimes I fall into deep despair when I hear all those hypocrites on the air. Oh, but every Sunday gives me hope when pastor, deacon, priest, and pope are all singing out their praises to some long-haired radical socialist Jew. They're all singing out their praises to.
Turning from the sublime to the ridiculous, let's have an update on the big Christmas story of last year, the underwear bomber. Whatever happened to that guy? Well, here's what I've pieced together from various news sources. In September 2010, a federal court in Detroit granted the request of Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, a young man who is a citizen of Nigeria, to fire his four lawyers and represent himself in court. Abdulmutallab is accused of attempting to use explosives hidden in his underwear to blow up a commercial airliner flying from Amsterdam to Detroit on Christmas Day 2009. Nothing suspicious so far, right? Obviously, a 24-year-old foreign national who knows nothing about U.S. law should be allowed to represent himself in a terrorism case that could result in his execution or at least imprisonment for life. A standby counsel named Anthony Chambers was appointed to advise Abdulmutallab during his self-defense. In a hearing in October 2010, Abdulmutallab petitioned the court not to allow standby counsel Chambers to see any of the prosecution's evidence against him. Okay, nothing suspicious here either, right? The petition was denied by U.S. District Court Judge Nancy Edmonds. She ruled that his legal advisor needed to see the state's evidence against Abdulmutallab. But Abdulmutallab is still being allowed to defend himself. Abdulmutallab is being held at a federal prison in Milan, Michigan. The judge set the next hearing for January 12. Now let's go back to 2009. I'm going to replay John Stewart's fine take on the incident from January 2010, but let me fill in some background. I think you'll agree that this is not just a false flag operation, but a false flag operation of such staggering ineptitude that we should demand our money back. October 2009. Mr. Abdulmutallab, a Nigerian banker, supposedly is worried that his son Umar was being converted to radical Islam. Does he ask the local assistant imam to give the kid some spiritual counseling? No. Instead, Dad reports his son to the U.S. State Department. On to a terrorist watch list goes young Umar. Nothing suspicious so far, right? Now, the rest takes place just before Congress is scheduled to vote on renewing certain repressive sections of the Patriot Act. Christmas Day 2009, young Umar goes to the Lagos airport and buys a one-way ticket to Detroit via Amsterdam. He's on a terrorist watch list. He pays cash for the ticket. He has no bag. He has no coat. He has no passport. They let him board the flight anyway. Do you sense some official collusion here? He changes planes in Amsterdam. A mysterious man, apparently from India, accompanies Umar to the check-in desk. Umar is on a terrorist watch list. He has no bags. He has no coat. He has no passport. And in Amsterdam, they let him board the flight anyway. In midair, Umar prepares to blow the plane out of the sky. He goes to the lavatory and locks the door. With a syringe, he squirts acid onto the PETN explosive in his underpants. Does he press himself against the fuselage, channeling the blast outwards through it? Of course not. He leaves the lavatory. Whatever is in his pants ignites while he's in the aisle. His pants start smoking. Other passengers wrestle him to the ground. Does a flight attendant then come over with a fire extinguisher? They didn't tell us that part. A year later, millions of dollars worth of full body scanners have been sold to the TSA to prevent near tragedies like this one from ever happening again. Now ask yourself, given this absurd cock and bull story, do you believe that Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab was a real terrorist, seriously attempting to blow up an airliner? Or was this a Punch and Judy show, aided by the security services of Nigeria, the Netherlands, and the United States, designed to ensure renewal of the Patriot Act and to sell full-body scanners? How preposterous does an official story have to be before Americans say, "I don't believe it"? Remember the two teenagers who were charged with attempting to take over the army base, Fort Dix? They didn't have a plan, and they didn't have even a gun. Not one gun. All they had was an enthusiastic friend egging them on. The friend turned out to be an FBI informer. They were going to capture an army base. The two of them. They were convicted, by the way. That was an earlier case of terrorism hysteria. But for sheer, absurd improbability, the underwear bomber scam of last Christmas is hard to top. Now here's John Stewart's take on it.
So what are the Al-Qaeda masterminds of terror 2.0 cook up?
Federal investigators say the man accused of the attempted bombing, Umar Abdulmutallab, hid a powerful explosive powder in specially made underwear.
So even if the bomb works, there's going to be 72 very disappointed virgins. Now, whenever there's an incident like this, the question is always, could we have seen it coming? But in this case, a Nigerian guy from Yemen with doomsday underpants? It seems to come out of nowhere.
As early as August of 2009, the Central Intelligence Agency was picking up information on a person of interest dubbed a Nigerian.
The suspect already on a U.S. terror watch list.
Put there after his father, a Nigerian banker, told the U.S. 5 weeks ago that he was worried his son was becoming radicalized.
Okay, all right, I too have a tendency to ignore messages from Nigerian bankers who wish to help me. But when they show up in person and aren't asking for a money order, but instead turning in their own son, maybe that conversation doesn't get filed under spam.
His visa had been yanked by the British. He paid cash for his ticket.
Yeah.
It was a one-way ticket.
Paid nearly $3,000 in cash for his plane ticket and checked no bags.
What? It's December! He's going from Nigeria to Amsterdam to Detroit without a coat? With a one-way ticket? Oh, do you think he's going to Detroit to start a better life? Why do you think he's going there? Because he heard there's lots of jobs. You know what, intelligence community? Meet me at camera three. All right, I know you guys are busy. Those 300 million Americans can't wiretap themselves, but remember something. This guy, Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, he paid cash, he flew one way. He had no luggage from a European capital and tried to blow up a plane with PETN explosives hidden in his shoes 8 years ago. So now, 8 years later, the Lex Luthor-like geniuses of Al-Qaeda decided, I got an idea. This time, why don't we have a guy pay cash and fly one way, no luggage from a European capital with the PETN explosives hidden under his... In 8 years, all they did was move the explosive up whatever the inseam measurement is, changing nothing else about the modus operandi. I realize security will never be 100%. We don't expect you to catch everything, but we do expect you to catch the exact same thing. At least we caught the guy. 8 years ago, we depended on passengers to subdue plane terrorists. At least we've come a long way since then.
The suspect, identified as Umar Farouk Abdul Muttalib, was tackled by passengers and apprehended.
So in 8 years, we've had two wars to overthrow terror-supporting regimes, trillions of dollars, thousands of lives, and our best defense against terrorism continues to be alert passenger tackles guy trying to light his...
We've got just enough time to squeeze in Stan Freberg's classic Green Christmas. Thanks for listening, and from the entire staff of New World Notes, best wishes for the holiday season.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Bah, humbug, everybody.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Well, the meeting will come to order, if you please. Are all the advertising people represented here?
Everyone except Amalgamated Cheese.
Well, if they're not here for the Christmas pitch, I can't help them find new ways of tying their product into Christmas. That's why I'm chairman of this board. Let's hear it for me.
Hear, hear, hear!
All right, Abercrombie, what are your people up to?
Oh, same thing as every year. 50,000 billboards showing Santa Claus pausing to refresh himself with our product.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the public has come to expect that.
That's right. It's become tradition.
Fine, fine. You there, Crass. I suppose your company's running the usual magazine ad showing cartons of your cigarettes peeking out of the top of Santa's sack.
Better than that. This year we have him smoking one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It got Santa a little more rugged, too. Both sleeves rolled up and a tattoo on each arm. One of them says, Merry Christmas.
Well, what does the other one say?
Less tars.
Great stuff.
But Mr. Scrooge.
Well, who are you?
Bob Cratchit, sir. I've got a little spice company over in East Orange, New Jersey. Do I have to tie my product into Christmas?
What do you mean?
Well, I was just going to send cards out showing the three wise men following the Star of Bethlehem.
I get it. And they're bearing your spices. No, that's perfect.
No product in it. I was just going to say, peace on earth, goodwill toward men, period.
Well, that's a peculiar slogan.
Old hat, Cratchit. That went out with button shoes. You're a businessman. Christmas is something to take advantage of. A red and green bandwagon to jump on. A sentimental shot in the arm for sales. Listen.
Deck the halls with advertising, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. While you can be enterprising, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 4 bars of soap,
3 cans of peas,
2 breakfast foods, and some toothpaste on a pear tree. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me
5 tubeless tires,
4 quarts of gin,
3 cigars,
2 cigarettes, and some hair tonic on a pear tree. Chestnuts roasting.
Say, Mother, as sure as there's an X in Christmas, you can be sure those are Tiny Tim chestnuts roasting. Tiny Tim chestnuts are full-bodied, longer-lasting. This visible shell protects the nut. Now with XK29 added for people who can't roast after every meal.
Tiny Tim, Tiny Tim, chestnuts all the way.
Tiny Tim's roast hot like a chestnut hot. And they are mild.
merchandising. Fa la 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 la. 'Tis the time for merchandising. Fa la 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 la. Profit never needs a reason. Fa la 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 la. Get the money, it's the season. Fa la 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 la.
Words to live by, Cratchit.
Ah, for you, maybe. Can't you just wish someone a Merry Christmas for the pure joy of doing it?
Why? What's the percentage in that? Let me show you how to make Christmas work for you.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And please buy our beer.
There you go, Cratchit. That's Christmas with a purpose.
I know, but wait a minute. Don't you guys make enough profit the other 11 months? Christmas comes but once a year.
Funny thing you should bring that up. That's exactly the point I was about to make. Hit it, boys.
Christmas comes but once a year, so you better make hay while the snow is falling. Oh, that's opportunity calling you.
Jingle bells, ba-da, ba-da, ba-da. Rub your hands, December's here. What a wonderful time to be glad and merry.
Just so you're mercenary too.
Buy an ad and show all the toys up on the shelf.
Just make sure that you get a plug in for yourself. Christmas comes but once a year, so you better cash in while the spirit lingers. It's slipping through your fingers, boy. Don't you realize Christmas can be such a monetary joy?
Well, I guess you fellas will never change.
Why should we? Christmas has two S's in it, and they're both dollar signs.
Yeah, but they weren't there to begin with.
Huh?
The people keep hoping you'll remember, but you never do.
Remember what?
Whose birthday we're celebrating.
Well, don't get me wrong. The story of Christmas and its simplicity is a good thing. I buy that. It's just that we know a good thing when we see it.
But don't you realize Christmas has a significance, a meaning?
A sales curve. Wake up, Cratchit. It's later than you think.
I know, Mr. Scrooge. I know.
On the first day of Christmas, the advertising's there. With newspaper ads,
billboards too,
business Christmas cards,
and commercials on a pear tree.
Jingles here, jingles there, jingles all the way.
Dashing through the snow in a 50-foot coupe. O'er the fields we go, selling all the way.